And everybody's like, oh my God, we're going to get lost everywhere. Nobody's going to be able to, oh my God, it's awful. The worst thing ever. Left-hand search is where it's at. And that's only been 20 years ago. But think about it. You get new stuff on an air pack or Bluetooth on radios. And everybody's like, oh my God, we can't do that. And it's like, I catch myself going, wait, am I the guy? And because it is a natural hardening of your brain over years, because then you do have time to reflect as a leader, as a captain, as a firefighter to go, wait, am I the guy who was saying all this dumb stuff when I got on?
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. My guest tonight is Jonah Smith. He has been with the Charlotte, North Carolina Fire Department since 2005. He's risen through the ranks and is currently assigned as a battalion chief at the 8th Battalion, which includes Charlotte Douglas International Airport. He has a bachelor's degree. He has a master's degree. He has certifications. He has worked in the volunteer side of things long before. He's a sought-after instructor, a 9-time FDIC instructor, has presented Firehouse Expo, Fire Rescue International, MAFSA, you name it, he's taught there. He's married with 2 children. Chief Jonah Smith, it is my absolute honor to have you on the scrap for episode number 210. Welcome, my brother.
Well, thank you for having me, sir. It's been a long time coming between our schedules trying to get it done, but happy to do it. And, you know, on a night that means a lot to everybody in America, but a lot of people in the fire service. And, you know, that's why I got my old FDNY shirt on. And, you know, I think it's important that, you know, we can't, like you and I talked before the show, you can't not mention 9/11. You know, it doesn't seem like 22 years ago, but a lot of good men and women lost that day, and a lot of people still a hole in their heart. But I think, you know, a lot of really good people, but a lot of really good days followed that day. So,
yes, sir, man. Anything I missed? Anything you'd like to add to the intro?
No. we'll talk enough.
Audience, get your questions primed and ready. For Jonah and myself, this one should be a good one. Kyle Romagus is here looking at YouTube, looking at Facebook, ready to grab your questions. Make sure we don't miss any of them. Quick announcements. If you are not a member of the Vigilantes, you should go and become so. It's $5 a month. It's the price of a cup of coffee. It's awesome. We have the Vigilante after party, which Jonah has said he will be there to get roasted by the Vigilantes. So we'll see how that goes. We also just had the 12th forum last week on the 7th, on Thursday. Kyle came in and absolutely destroyed it with Thornton's Rule, Andy Frederick's article. He just broke it down, and man, it was good times. He assigned the homework, and he crushed it. So if you want to be a part, go to firehousevigilance.com and sign up. Now, the sponsors, Key Hose, the hose experts. Check them out online at keyhose.com and follow them on Facebook. Then, the Affordable Drill Tower, firefighter owned and operated. The only thing that you can't do on an Affordable Drill Tower is live fire. Affordable Drill Tower, you can rappel, stretch hose lines, go through the stairs, go through the floor, do window bailouts, cut holes in the roof props, use the apartment balconies, pump into the FDC, or flow water from the sprinkler system. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. FireStationFurniture.com provides a complete line of quality furniture for your firehouse. Firefighter owned and operated, they understand the strain that firefighters put on furniture and offer furniture that's built to last. Visit www.firestationfurniture.com for more information. And now, one of my favorite people on this planet, Jeremy Daunch, National Fire Radio. He is a solid brother. He is doing solid brother things. National Fire Radio is one of the inspirations and one of the reasons that the scrap exists. You want to talk about shining a light on tradition and history of the fire service, you have to check out National Fire Radio. Jeremy is the man. He is a machine. Every single day, there is new content being put out there to be consumed by firefighters. My interview is coming up with him on Wednesday, so I'm excited to hype that. Check it out. Go like, follow, and subscribe to the best that there is, National Fire Radio. And with that, we are ready to do our discussion. My brother, I always love to ask for topics to discuss, and people don't know the backstory, but originally you were supposed to be here in January. And then yep. I think that one was my fault.
Yep.
And then we moved it to May. And you got and
then
promoted.
I swapped shifts.
Right. You promoted it, and we had to swap the day again. And so it only took a year to make this happen. But you sent, we'll start off with engine company operations, because that's, I'm going to go right into your wheelhouse and kick it off with engine company operations. We'll start with a soft toss. The single biggest takeaway you want someone to have when they come and take one of your engine classes.
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, as an instructor, you can go out and talk till you're blue in the face. But the big thing that I always want, you know, as an instructor or my group that I may be teaching with, you know, and I've taught with a lot of different people, is always to have something tangible a student can walk away from. And that's the question, right? Well, part of it is the passion for engine work. I think that's the single biggest takeaway. I think Jonah brings to the table. I'm very passionate about engine operations, very passionate about efficient engine operations, and not just, yes, Charlotte, we have four people, but right here down the road from my house where I volunteer, we don't have four people. You know, it's a very different environment, and to bring that tangible experience from both sides is something that you know, you ask me what somebody taking my class, that's what I'm going to say. I hate to say it, you know, well, get out of my class. But I think that's a huge thing that my group brings to the table is a passion for engine work, and that it's not just open shut, and it's not just stretch a line to the door and make it work, and we can overpower it with 50 people, because we can absolutely do that. But there's nothing more satisfying than putting a fire out more quickly because of your training, you know, and the skills you've gained, you know, in any class you've taken. And, you know, you could name 1,000 engine instructors throughout the history of the fire service. And, you know, that's the tangible takeaway that I've always sought for is, you know, a passion for the topic. And then as well, something that they can use in their environment. And I think that's using experience, right? Context of instruction is super important. You know, anybody can teach an engine class, but to have the experience to back up some of the points that you're driving home is a separate thing. So I think that's kind of where I land on that. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely, brother. I love it. Do you find it's easier? Like you said, you have four people on every rig. That's your minimum staffing. I'm guessing on Charlotte. Sir. Yeah. Same here. So I'm spoiled. I mean, absolutely. And, do you find it's easier to teach, what am I trying to say? Task saturated, like smaller departments, are they hungrier because they have less people, or is it just different?
I think the aha moments happen more in the smaller departments. I've been super fortunate to teach around my state, South Carolina, where I actually live. Charlotte, everybody thinks Charlotte's like hundreds of miles from South Carolina. It's actually the border city. So where I'm sitting in my house in South Carolina, I live 15 minutes south of the city. But I think the biggest thing I've seen is in smaller departments, those aha moments happen way more quickly because, again, if you've got one person feed the line and you teach them to feed it well, all of a sudden on the next fire, it's bam. Right. Whereas in my organization where I work, you know, we have more people. And so unless you're in an outline fire or somewhere else, you know, where you're not down in downtown or you're kind of away from people, you don't really have those aha moments as often. And sometimes even then you don't, because, you know, some of our house fires, and I've been to them as a chief, as a safety officer, and as a captain, and as a firefighter, where if everybody took their air pack off, took a deep breath, some of the fires would go out because everybody's like, man, you put 27 people. We don't have 27 people on our fire.
Right. Right.
So I think that's the biggest takeaway for a lot of those people is they go out and they figure out how to move a line, how to flow and move, how to do the stretch efficiently with one person. Because, yes, I have – I mean, on all of our trucks, we have a nozzleman, a backup, a captain. Some of the – you know, a lot of the departments in this country are, if they're lucky, three, right? So then right. The captain's the slack man and the captain. Well, that – we all know three is – and I always say three is the worst number in the fire service because you can do so much and so little all at the exact same time. And I think that's a – that's a huge thing for me is seeing that when in the smaller departments, the folks who are running, you know, two people on a truck, right? They're running, you know, it's a driver who maybe, you know, it may be a pay position or it may be the 80-year-old guy. That's all he does is drive. How do I stretch a line and move it effectively at a house fire when my effective, I mean, I forget what department it was. I was at FDIC sitting, I think it was in Castro's class with a few other people up front, a few other instructors up front, and this guy comes up and he goes, hey, I got a question for y'all. Y'all act like you're pretty dialed in on some of these response models that Chief Castro is talking about. He said, what do you do when your mutual aid's 45 minutes away? And we're like, well, you know, so you like, wait, your mutual, like your second station or like, right. Mutual aid? He's like, no, our backup, like it's three of us. And then 45 minutes from them, we get help. Ooh. And I was like, I have no idea what to tell you, man.
Right.
And so I think that's a piece that I've seen is in the smaller departments, those aha moments happen more and they're more familiar. Again, if you're in an efficient, if you put the skill set of an efficient engine company who can move line, who can flow, who can do all that in a department like mine, the sky's the limits, right? Like we can blow it out of the water because we've got four people.
Right.
But you take those same skills and that's on every company, but you take it on the, you know, a smaller department, the same thing is possible with less people because again, it's my organization, we're 1,000 people. Guess what? It turns like an aircraft carrier to make any culture change, any change at all. Whereas if you're in a two-station department, like I envy a lot of that because it's like turning a canoe around. It's like, oh, we're just going to do this today. We're going to switch our engine ops today. We're going to buy hose. We're going to buy nozzles. Yes, it costs money, but this is the skill set we're going to teach. We're going to turn that around. Whereas us, you know, right now we're in a hose swap over and some color coding the lines and stuff. And it's been 6-7 years in the working to get that done through capital projects, to get it done through just the purchasing, everything that we have to do. So I think, right. Again, that small department, I think I see a little bit more of that aha. So.
No, I love it. Love the answer. Catch you up on everybody. We got James Michalisco saying, 3 Bugle checking in from Indy. What a great homage to our brothers and sisters that made the ultimate sacrifice on a very iconic day in American Fire Service history. Never forgets. A lot of never forgets. James Steele coming at you said he's dreamy with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 exclamation points. I'm assuming.
Low standards.
Brian Brush said, yeah, buddy, with a few exclamation points. Going to be another phenomenal scrap. There we go. Solid brother of today's fire service. Time to grind. That's coming at you from Kehoe's. Robert Ramirez checking in. Oh, yeah. There's tons of people checking in. This guy is so dreamy. John Spanbauer joining the dream wagon.
I'm going to give John Spanbauer a shout out because he actually has the best engine versus ladder comeback I have seen in a while. I saw it on the he said, you know, it was, I forget who he was responding to. He was responding to somebody's comment on Facebook and he said, I think we all know the engine came before the truck. It was the first thing in the fire service. Cause I'm sure if they could, if it didn't, they figured out real quick, they needed an engine.
Right on. I love it. Okay. I think I got almost everybody caught up. Facts. There we go. If you got questions, especially on engine ops, cause we're going to switch off of it after a little bit. So if you got questions, especially on engine ops, please, please, please get them in. Cody Brooks is coming at you with the first question from the audience. Are you ready?
Yep.
What is the standard load on Charlotte engines? Do y'all teach a specific hose grip?
So that's another thing. Turning as like I said, turning as an aircraft carrier, we're finally into the standardization of our trucks. I know some people on here are like, "What?" I mean, we have 43 engine companies. We're a large organization. It's always been kind of a tailor made for the area. And our hose committee got together and through, like I said, a 7-year process of some really smart people in our department. In fact, I was a late addition to the committee after a few years. And, some folks who are super passionate about it. We've been able to at least standardize our trucks. We're going to go left side is going to be the long side. We're going to have the 5-inch in the middle, which we talked about moving it over. But there's a variety of things we're working on with that. And then the right side standard. Our organization is made up, for those of you all out there like, man, I wish our department could change. Our department could change. We thought the same thing. And it took Aaron Fields coming into our department about 5 or 6 times doing some training until the Minuteman became kind of widespread in our department. That is the standard on most apparatus. However, I would say the standard Charlotte, if you said, hey, you come to Charlotte, you will guarantee to find at least one double stack flat load on the truck. That's kind of been our go-to for years. That's what I grew up on. No triple fold, just a lot of double stack flat and Minuteman. The new trucks we're kind of working with and standardizing is going to be a single stack Minuteman or double stack modified Minuteman with, you know, 100 and either 150 or 100 sitting next to it. We run typically, we're starting to run longer lines because, I mean, we're no different than any other city that's growing to the extreme, like a ton of people on here throughout America. So we're starting to run some 300s, which create a challenge because now Corley pulls up on engine one, he's got a 300. Jonah's used to running only 200s. Load it a certain way. Well, then Corley doesn't need the 300. He only pulls the 200. Now I have to pull a 300 where we already knew it was too long. So our new apparatus that we just spec'd out, We've added a 300-foot dedicated line, which will probably be in a Stinger or some sort of Minuteman just because of, again, the length of the hose, the amount of hose. But we run a lot of that modified Minuteman. We're switching to in a lot of trucks because of dividers in the tows bed and then a double stack flat on most everything else. In a couple companies, you'll see the Seattle load. I've heard it called 15 different things, you know, where that you've got the Minuteman stacks with the coupling kind of, especially in a double stack where it's kind of crisscrossed down the back of the truck. So you can take 100, break it, take 100, break it. We're using that in a few of the rigs, but mostly Minuteman flat load is what we run. Okay. Again, we're trying to standardize. I don't know that we're ever going to standardize hose loads. We want to make sure everybody can pull them. Everybody can load them, which is what our recruit program is made up of. Making sure they know the flat load, how to do short setbacks with the flat load, how to do long setbacks with the flat load, the challenges of the flat load, the Minuteman and the same, you know, the same thing, the challenges of it, the versatility of it, whatever. And then kind of standardizing the lengths and the layout on the truck, maybe not the hose loads. So if engine one wants to run all flat loads with the exception of the brand new trucks, we'll be able to do that in any configuration. But one of the goals with our newer trucks that we just spec'd was to maintain some of that company level. You know, there's some companies on one side of our town that really like the flat load. They run it. They run a lot of fires. They do a very good job with it. And some of our strongest personalities are on that side of town. And I went to that station and I looked at the driver who's one of our senior drivers, one of our best drivers. And I said, hey, we're not going to take your flat load. We want to give you that line. However, on this side, we're going to have to do this. And here's why. And we explained it. And both all the officers we spoke to from the committee agree with that. Like, hey, don't take my flat load, but I understand we need some versatility in our hose bed. So, because, you know, I mean, since I've moved here, I think we've grown 200 or so thousand people. So we're going vertical. We've changed the environment so we can't have the same makeup of the truck we've had for, you know, the 18 years I've been on. We all agree with that. And the command staff actually finally realized that. And, you know, they have a tough job because they don't see everything that some people on the street see. And I think that we brought a good case and we're able to change some of that. And then the chief, his newest initiative is one of us from the hose committee goes down there when a new truck goes in service and we ensure that it's standardized, left side's long, right side's regular, but apartment bundle goes here and that's how we do it. So
rock on. Nozzles, because someone else asked hose package. It was a follow-up question.
So
from Josh Everett. Yeah, I wanted to get it in there. Go ahead.
Okay, so hose package in Charlotte, we run a 150 at 75 fog. We did finally switch to we run a little weird on our smoothbores. We run 1 3/16 on the pre-connect for the truck, but then on our high-rise packs, we run 1 1/8. And the reason for that, we wanted to remain consistent, but we tried the 1 3/16, put it to pre-93 levels, which we have a lot of. We don't have as many as some cities do, but a very large amount of pre-93 buildings that we couldn't. The concession on that of getting the 40 PSI tip pressure on the 1 3/16, we were getting what I'd call hand sucking kinks, where when we were feeding line during the test, my hand, I actually pulled my glove off twice feeding line because it kinked so badly. And the stream quality was poor. So we had to do some training on that for the driver operators. So if you ran 2.5 off the back and then you extend off your dead load with your high rise pack, like that's going to be two different pressures. And you know, different volumes. We have looked at, we're currently switching hose to key hose, ironically, but look, we're going combat ready because we did an extensive hose test, which I hate to open myself up to this, but anybody who wants it, you can reach out either on my Facebook page through Corley or email address. We did a, I think it's a 20-page document hose study using stuff that's way above firefighter. Hey, Corley, what are you running?
Right.
We used what's called a Pew matrix, which is actually a commercial decision-making process that industry uses to make key decisions. Dennis Legear and Leo Melly from Boulder. Leo from Boulder was from the old Fire Service Warrior group that I was fortunate to be a part of. And Dennis, we had a discussion and he said, hey, use this Pew matrix. Leo can tell you about it. And we used it, and we found that the 1.88 hose key combat ready worked very well. We tested, I think, 5 flows, 150, 160, 175, 185. Maybe it's just the 4 of those. So we switched that. So we're switching to combat ready, color coded. Our red line will be our long line. Our blue line is going to be our 200 foot line. Yellow, 2.5 pre-connect, and red dead load with an orange apartment load. And even I was teaching our in-service today, which has an engine component to it. And everybody was like, we had a couple new trucks down there. And they're like, it is so nice to say, hey, charge the blue line. And it's the dumb stuff that we need.
But
like we said, I mean, we had all red lines. So, hey, I need slack on the secondary line.
Sure. Right.
Which one is that? Or
right.
More pressure on the red line. Okay. So everybody gets some. So that's kind of where we landed with that. Again, a 150 to 75 fog. I think once we get the hose straight in terms of having a higher quality hose, because we're running a lower quality hose like everybody, which was a challenge for us. We have a lot of kinking problems and stuff like that, even at 75 PSI. I think we would like to explore swapping our fogs down to a 50.
Right.
A once. And that's why we tested the four flows. I think we might look down the road at a 175 at 50. We may not. I know that the comments I've already heard on the new package we got is already very positive. Like, this doesn't kink at all compared to the stuff. I mean, literally today it was side by side. It's like, why does that not do that? And it's like, here's why. But
that's education, baby. That's awesome.
Oh yeah. We also went, just on the 2.5, we went true 2.5 on our 2.5 lines. That started as a high rise project, which we were fortunate to be able to do some capital improvement piece. You know, it's very, one of the things that's hardest about our hose package, and I think it's any department struggles with this, but us just on an exponentially higher level, is how do you purchase four sections of 2.5 and a nozzle for 43 engine companies? That's, you know, that we still got to put fuel in the trucks. We still got to have toilet paper. So that's a huge challenge, and we were able to split it over some budget years and use some alternative funding measures and stuff. And that's kind of where we've done. It's a huge challenge, but
right.
You know, and again, it's no less a challenge for a 5-station department because you don't have the money than it is. It's just 43 stations. It's so hard to get, you know,
slow roll. Like you said, the aircraft carrier is a perfect analogy. Kyle says, have him say the name of the decision-making system they use for the hose study again. He said, because I'm used to people making fun of my Oklahoma drawl, right?
What are you trying to say? I have an accent?
He said, the Southern drawl is confusing people on pronunciation.
Let me see. It's the Pew Matrix, and I can – let me make sure I'm spelling it right. I'm going to type it on the computer and see if I can't. There you go. It's right here. Let me see if I can somehow throw it in the –
Chat. Kyle will throw it in the chat.
Yeah, here, I'll put it in the chat. Is that the easiest thing for y'all? Yeah,
sure.
Okay. There's the Google search of it. It explains it. And I promise you, if somebody on the show is wanting to use it, you're probably going to have to follow up with a phone call to me. And just like most of us talkers, it's probably going to be about a 45-minute conversation. So carve some time out.
I copied it from you. I threw it out there. It says it got to YouTube and Facebook. It didn't go to Twitter or LinkedIn. So, but anyway, you got it on those two, which I think is where most people watch anyway. So there you go. Thank you, Jonah, for the link. That's perfect. And now let me get back to Kyle. Kyle had a question to follow up besides the pronunciation. can you expand on how Charlotte runs a long line, i.e. apartment lay, as some would call it?
Okay, so and this is all things, again, the aircraft carrier, right? We have a couple different ways to do things. A few of our – and this is what drove our decision-making on the we pretty much, just so everybody understands when I say the new trucks, we have newer trucks that were kind of a takeoff on our old spec that's kind of historically been our spec for, I'd say, 16 – I think it's 16, 17 years is when the – it probably was made when I got on the fire department in 2005, but the first trucks were delivered in 2005, 6, 7. There's been a lot of changes. We were able to drop the hose bed a little more and remove some roll-up doors on the rear and all that. And that drove some other discussions. And one of the discussions was people started running 300-foot lines. And we were like – and it wasn't companies, you know, like where I was stationed, Engine 20, Engine 42, 65, those companies in our department – in their still alarm have an enormous amount of apartments. And what really got a couple of us on the hose committee going is we did an in-service on long lines a few years ago. and Station 36, where I started as a firefighter, Cup pulls up and they got a 300 footer. And we're like, why do y'all have one? And they get to talking about it. They got a whole thought process why they did it. So we've started seeing those pop up, even in the downtown companies, because again, these are the ones like we burned down here a couple months ago, but they're enormous. They're block long buildings. You know, you have enormous parking garages in the middle. You're getting these long stretches. So a lot of the downtown companies are even running in 250 to 300s, just a straight inch and three quarter. The other option you might see would be the 250, two and a half pre-connect and unscrew the tip, because again, we added that flexibility by going to smooth bores and getting away from fogs. 3 or 4 years ago, we finally got that done. And we do have gated Ys on the truck. Some trucks, that's one of the things we're trying to figure out where we're going to land, you know, and we're not, I know if you put that in the chat, like there are thousands of departments everywhere who are eat up and want to do things, the way they see it, but then actually putting it into 43 fire stations is challenging. You will find a lot of reducers. You'll find a lot of captains that have Ys on their trucks because say A and B shift love the Y, say C shift may just always stretch the two and a half and unscrew the tip off. So you'll see that. But typically you're going to run anything over 200 in our department. Let's just say if they don't have a 300, it's going to be a dead load. Typically those are loaded. We've gotten kind of standardized with that where you got 100-foot loops so that you can estimate your stretch, right? We're trying to work on instituting a common nomenclature for that. One that we've really taken well to is the Wilmington Fire Department in North Carolina. Was fortunate to go down there and kind of do a train the trainer for their folks. And one of the things one of their captains did, they talked about 200 extended. And I said, well, what does that mean? That's 200 foot of dead load finished with 100 foot of inch and three quarter. So the captain can turn and go 200 extended and they know they're grabbing the bundle and 200 feet of dead load. That's it.
Okay.
So we're working through that. But again, you've got the gated Ys, reducers, a lot of the companies who have looked into it, researched it, flow tested it, or have gotten in the reducers. Some of the companies still are hung up on the gated Ys and they work until they don't. And, you know, I think we all know the hazards of that. We could beat that dead horse for the next 2 hours and none of the arguments we're going to have in the right. chat is going to fix what other people think. I'm not a fan of them, but however, if you're going to use them, like I told a company today at InService, I said, if you're going to use them, it is a all stop for me if it's not tied off and open that you have to do that. But, and we do that pretty well when we use them because we go to a decent amount of apartment fires and they work a lot, but there are times when they don't work. We've got, you know, we had a when I first got on the fire department, we had a, before I was eat up, and this leads into your question later about things I would have done differently from the beginning of my career. Education would have been one of them.
Right.
But we had a mayday with a gated Y problem and it's on helmet cam. Before helmet cams were cool, one of the guys kicks it halfway shut. They start not being able to put water on something, and then there's a mayday right afterwards. So we've that's the way we do it. Again, a lot of similar to everybody else. One thing I'll say that's unique, just to give context to the question Kyle's asking too, is all of our rigs, everything comes off the rear. We have no pre-connects on anything. One of the things we're doing in the spec we just blew up, and are now will be our new engine companies. We will have two bumper lines for some reasons, you know, of 150 or 200 foot range. But all of our apparatus, we have four discharges off the rear, and that's where our pre-connects and dead load are. So gotcha. When I spoke of that earlier, I didn't give good context on it.
Okay. No, that makes sense. Yeah.
We don't have crosslays. We don't have crosslays because I think it was either Chief Hannon or Chief Fincher got tired of engine companies parking at the front door. So I know you're a well-studied, you're a well-studied guy. There's something called engineering controls.
Right. I love it.
And that's what they did. They engineered they said, you know what? We're just not going to put crosslays on anymore.
Quit aiming the crosslay at the front door, man.
You can't aim it if it's not there. So, and that's the way our trucks are laid out. So everything's off the rear as well. So it kind of, I like it because then I go to my office to go do work instead of having to pick which office, you know, is it the home office or is it the big office? I go to the office. So
Brian Brush coming at you, Jonah. Now Can you throw out a few of your multifamily dwelling engine company keys for the group? Since we're on apartments anyway, but yeah. You don't have to teach your whole class, but just some of the keys as much. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things, and again, instructors, we're always trying to keep it fresh, have something new to teach. And one of the things that, I've always been passionate about engine company operations. And then I was stationed at two stations. The first station I was a permanently assigned captain at was across the street from, probably 100 apartment buildings, if not more, like directly out the door. And the last station where went to safety out of, but where I was for 4 or 5 years as captain was one of the most apartment ridden cities or areas in the city. So learned a lot from my folks. We went out and trained a lot. It wasn't in a nice, the second place I went is not in a great area. So it was a great area to train because people who don't have a lot of stuff enjoy seeing firefighters who are training to save their stuff. Nice. And people don't interact with the fire department. So we kind of made a point about once every 4 days or something to go out to an apartment building, look at it, go out to a building, maybe stretch on it, throw some ground ladders. And I think what some of the things we learned were, hose stretch estimation can't be practiced enough. You can even practice on the golf course. We're coming up on hunting season here. Actually, hunting season's already going on down here. But I don't like snakes or mosquitoes, so I'm not out in the woods just yet. I like to get a freeze under our belt. But again, if you're looking at distance estimation, you can use a lot of common hobbies people have. I watch baseball. My son plays baseball. I know what 90 feet looks like. I know what 60 feet looks like. And using those abilities to carry over to going to fires at apartments are huge because you get in some of the stairwells that are present in some of these garden apartments or in some of these massive block long apartments, man, you dump too much hose in them. It's not going to be a good day. You're going to have lack of flow. You're going to have kinks. You're going to have problems. And Lord forbid you get into standpipe operations where you don't know your hose management or hose estimation and you hook up and now I got the cool increaser in my bag. Well now, I'm another 50 feet short. Well now I got to get another one. And, so hose estimation is a big thing I touch on in that class, as well as I think it's important for anybody going to apartment fires. Keeping hose off the ground is huge. So having hose loads that work and also work for hose estimation, because I pick on drivers all the time, because I never was one. So you got to pick on, I always say the driver's creed is eat till they're sleepy, sleep till they're hungry, and bitch about everything. That's pretty much what all paid engineers do. But they're super operationally important to us. But is a driver going to go run down a 300-foot line to figure out there's 300 feet on the ground? Or can I set it up where I've got 100 loops? And he looks up and goes, hey, when I started the shift, there's 600. Now there's 300. That means there's 300 extended, 300 plus the 100. He can do his friction loss like that. And I think that's a huge piece is setting your rig up. And I know for some people, that's the biggest challenge because Charlotte, we cycle through trucks 8 to 10 years. But it's still an 8 to 10 year mistake if we have a problem.
Right.
Some folks listening right now, they got rigs that don't fit their communities. I mean, my volunteer department, our rig does not fit our community, but that's because it was a rural community 10 years ago when the truck was purchased. And now, actually it was 15 years ago when they bought most of the trucks. And the problem is now we've got 15-foot setbacks with no real good way to get that. And then we've got houses that are 4,000 or 5,000 square feet with no way to do a big line.
Gotcha.
I think that's a big piece is rig design, setting yourself up for success, but also setting the operational tempo is important. But I think Ben Schultz, man, he's like Brian's second worst friend to Sean Duncan, but Ben Schultz's class, every second counts. Really, when I was kind of starting out that class, really hit me in the throat. It was like what he's saying and what I'm thinking are the same thing. And he's just talked about like, if you waste 3 seconds on the stretch and 10 seconds peeing before the call and 5 seconds, you've taken 10 breaths from that person that's laying in the hallway depending on you. And I think that's a huge piece for me is that operational tempo, but also then setting your rig up where I can, to the point of apartment fires, that's one of the reasons that a few folks on our committee really pushed that. It was not me pushing it, but it's when it was pushed out, hey, we're going to push this in the meeting. I'm like, absolutely makes sense. We put our long line on the left. We put our apartment bundle, if you paid attention, on the right. Everybody goes, well, why don't you just put them together? Well, then if I'm stretching the dead load, I'm waiting on you to get out of my way to get the bundle so I can go force the door, because I was always a single piece engine guy. So I've got to force the door and get the liner operation. Well, if the bundle's here and you're here, I can't get to it. I got to wait. And that's 5-10 seconds where I could be gapping the door. So I think that's a huge piece, is that the rig set up. And again, just operational tempo, that practice is a huge thing. If you're looking to see what the gold standard of apartment fire line advancement is, there's a video on irons and ladders that we show our recruits now, because I'm like, that is what we're trying to drive right there. We're trying to get them to get the, and I joke about it in the class, but every fire has a shirtless guy running around. There's some dude with no shirt on everywhere, right? And the way that they utilize the shirtless guy to help with slack management, to the way they force the door, to the mask up, to the captain getting in the way and Ryan telling him, hey, like, Cap, get out of the way. We're time for water. And they knock out a fire in 2 minutes from the time they pull the parking brake. Like, that's where you got to push your company to. And some of that is going out and challenging. You know, when I was at either one of the stations, we'd go out and figure out what it would take us to stretch 200-400 feet of line. Not in a parking lot, like with obstacles. At apartments, we were able to go, hey, I think they're tearing that down in a couple months. Nobody's there. Let's go over there.
Right. So, right. No, I love it. Awesome question from Brian. Speaking of Brian Brush, just because I can say it, he's actually coming back on the scrap for the first time in like 4 years, October 29th, Halloween edition. And then it made me look at it because you said Ben Schultz, because Ben Schultz is the very next week. So pretty exciting.
Yeah. Great dudes. Obviously at different departments now, but when I met Brian at FDIC, he's opened my eyes to a lot of things, but he associates himself with a lot of really good people. And Ben being one of the many I can say that I've met through Brian that are really good people.
One of the best. Yep. Two of the Brian Crush. You're right, Everett. I'm sorry. It is Brian Crush. I completely forgot. That's my bad.
Don't ride calves with him. Sometimes he runs out on them.
Samuel Caraway wants to know, from a volunteer / combination department standpoint, what is your response to admin not wanting to change or try out new hose loads for the reason of nobody's going to pull it right or repack it right instead of trying it out in training and teaching?
Well, so, and I'll say this. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I don't know the silver bullet answer to that, but I can tell you in my experience, I'll give you a great example. So I volunteered at a department called Pleasant Valley. Good department, lots of history with it. I was the only person from the outside that like didn't grow up in this area. I moved to Indian Land, where I live now in Lancaster County. And man, there's a bunch of old timers there. There's a bunch of guys, a bunch of really, people who worked on farms and could outwork me every day of the week, even though they're like 50, 60 years old. And one of those guys, and I know he wouldn't listen, somebody will tell him about it after this, but Mark Carnes was one of the old timers, and he was a worker. He was a captain at our department, and he was all during training. He would out. I told him, I said, I tell him to this day, he will work himself to death one day. He's just a country boy. And he was very adamant. We kept the triple fold. And I was like, man, we need to switch. We need to look at something else. And man, I've been on this fire department 2 years. So I'm like, all right, I got to buy my time. And we kept talking. Well, then I said, hey, Mark, I want to do a hose study and look at this. And this is where I first did a hose study, was at Pleasant Valley. Well, I didn't really know what Mark did for a living. And, I'm very opinionated, very passionate. So those two things can sometimes come off the very wrong way. I think one of our chiefs said it best today. Sometimes you get that with the package. If you get a passionate guy who's opinionated but factual, sometimes it's going to make people mad. Well, I was that guy, and we go out to do this hose study. And I said, Mark said something about hose size and all this stuff. And I knew this guy is the guy that could estimate how much water you were flowing by putting a yardstick in the dump tank. I knew he was a smart guy, because I was like, I don't even know how you convert inches to gallons, but whatever. We'll figure that out later, Mark. Well, he's a hydraulic engineer.
Gotcha.
He designs piping systems for nuclear power plants. I didn't find that out to the day I'm sitting here preaching about friction loss and everything to a guy who knows friction loss way better than I did.
Inside out.
But the approach was key. I didn't go in there saying I was right, he was wrong. We worked together, and it was funny because the first line we had the what are they called? Not I think they're called the Saber Jets. They're the ones where you do this for the smoothbore part and this to turn off the fog. It's an Akron product. Yeah. It was a failed product, and Akron agreed with it, but we had it because that engine was designed with calves. Well, Mark and I discussed it. He didn't like the nozzles, whatever. We flowed them, and we were flowing 95 gallons a minute. And this was in 2011, 12. We're not talking in 94. And Mark said, there ain't no way. There ain't no way. Well, Mark Lytle, who now is, you know, big and key, he was down here with us, and he said, no, we'll calibrate it. And he calibrated the flow meter, and he's like, no, this is what you're flowing. And at that moment, something clicked in Mark's head, and he was like, we need to change nozzles, like, now. So that was a piece of it. The hose loads for us, and it's a funny story now because we didn't kill anybody, but we got a new tanker, had cross lays on it, and the triple fold, of course, is the benefit of it is a bi-directional load. Sometimes you can pull the nozzles through. Well, the truck comes in and we can't get the nozzles through. The bay isn't wide enough, and there's no way to alter it. So that was like, well, we got to do something. Like, we'll do a triple fold off one and one off the other. I was like, man, that is not going to work, because if we pull a line off the captain side and got to pull this backup line, it's not going to work. And it took me, literally, we did it at training and a bunch of the old timers. And I won't say there was an ulterior motive with me, but I knew how it was going to work out. Said, all right, let's do it. We're going to do a drill Monday night training. And we pulled it off, and then we pulled the second line, and not one line ever made it on the other side without three people helping pull it off the tires. And two or three of them came up to me afterwards and said, tonight we're fixing this. Put that Minuteman thing you want on there now. So we switched our rigs that night. Next morning, 1402, our primary out engine goes on a call, fire alarm in Fort Mill. Quite often we go. Well, you go up to the top of the road and you take a left. Well, when they took a left, that hose load became known as the Mile Man. It was no longer the Minuteman, because that son of a bitch would deploy so well it didn't even need a firefighter to deploy it.
Gotcha.
And we laid 200 feet down the side of one of the busiest roads up here in this end of the county. And the funny part was, there was a guy, he actually was a city fireman driving, you know, working part-time. And the construction workers are like, hey, and they're honking the horn, hey, you know, like thinking they're thanking us for our service. And no, it's because we were ripping mailboxes out down the road and they were trying to stop us. But again, to lead to that, so that was a huge obstacle, right? Like, we can't even put this hose load on the truck without it falling off. The triple fold never fell off. So we had to invest in hose nets, and I had to eat my pride for a little bit. And we went back to the triple fold because we didn't want to kill anybody, right? And I think my advice would be, in all that story, is sometimes you just got to prove it, and you got to have the right approach. I always say that, and, you know, I know we're going to talk leadership, but you can't be the dude with the backpack and napalm on. Like, nobody stands next to that guy on the battlefield, because they know if he gets shot, like, it's bad for you.
Right.
And so you become that isolated person, and then sometimes, especially in a volunteer department, depending on the politics and all that, a combination department's even worse, because now you got paid guys with opinions that might be more valuable than volunteers, or vice versa. You've got to think about your approach, and, hey, like, this works, here's this. But I mean, I'm going to tell you, a lot of change sometimes comes with the Aaron Fields coming in, the Jonah Smith, the Kyle Romagus, the Brian Brush. And then somebody goes, oh, man, that thing Jonah's been saying the whole 20 years he's been here, it does work.
Right, right.
And I think David Rhodes alluded to that one of the first times I ever heard it. He said, the only reason y'all are here sitting, it was at Ben Martin's conference in Richmond. He said, the only reason y'all are listening to me is because I'm dressed up and I carried a suitcase in the back of the theater. He said, nobody knows who David Rhodes is. You just know I'm from out of town. I'm in the fire service.
Right.
And some of that, it takes that. And I think that's not a silver bullet answer, but I think your approach, and I think facts. If you stick to the facts, like, you might lose the argument, but the battle, again, I've heard it so many times, I don't know who actually said it in the first place, but 10 pounds of pressure 100% of the time works way better than 100 pounds of pressure right now. And that was that. That's the approach we've taken in my organization, you know, where I work, and then where I volunteer. And you know, people said we were dumb for going to 50 PSI nozzles down here in this county. And then we were the first ones to have smooth bores on 1¾ inches. And everybody's like, oh, my God. Well, now in the county equipment catalog, guess what's in the catalog? Smooth bores and low pressure nozzles.
Right.
So, it takes some, you got to have some thick skin, because I can't tell you how many times and I was proven wrong a couple times, but it was by context, not necessarily by the facts. And you know, you take that, but again, you can't always be right either, because none of us are always right. And I think that's a huge piece, because if you come across as that guy, well, I heard this dude on the scrap say this, man, people don't care who, like, overall, people don't care. They don't care. They care about what works for them and their communities. And right. Some of the people, especially in a volunteer combination apartment, I mean, some of the people that you're probably talking about have been in that community 30 or 40 years. And they're like, I mean, that was what I was up against here. Like, well, we've had the triple fold since 1982. Well, you do realize since 1982, we've added about 18,000 people to this small area. And the houses are now 15 feet off the road. And that 66-foot triple fold ain't going to work like you thought it would. And right. By the way, we argue about putting it back on the truck for 20 minutes when I could have the Minuteman loaded like that.
Every time.
So I think that's
bottom. Give me bottom. Give me top.
Yeah, both bottom. You dumbass. That's not the top. Well, what do you want? The middle? And like I always say, most of the time when we're loading it, it should be the happiest time in the fire service because we just went to a fire. But no, we sit there and argue about who's got bottom, middle, and top. But to answer your question about their arguing, you can't pull it. I think some of that is if you get into some of the more complicated Minuteman pieces, the Stinger load. Maybe that one I can get behind you, because I can tell you that takes some training on. Even me sometimes, depending on where the discharge is, I'm sitting there drawing it out like you did in your entrance test. But I think it's facts. Like, I can load a Minuteman or flat load faster. I can actually stretch either one of those faster, because, you know, flat load, I can invert it, I can drag it, you know, I can do same thing with the Minuteman. I think that's just it sticking to the facts and demonstration. And I mean, a class we taught not too long ago, they challenged us, hey, we're going to pull our load. And the guy who was teaching with me, they said, we want him to pull that load. And I told him he was going to be fired and have to find a ride home if he got beat. But but they had a combination of a triple fold and a flat load. I didn't feel like it worked. And we showed them that we could load it faster and that it was more efficient to the door. And, you know, I don't know where they landed as an organization, but we gave them definitely some thinking points, because, you know, I've never been to a fire more, but I think I know how it would operate, but I've never been there. So I can't say, hey, this is what you got to do. And I think that's a huge piece to remember, that just because Ray McCormick or Jonah Smith or Dennis Laguerre says it doesn't mean it works in your department. Because
right.
We all sit here and say, as instructors, don't cater to the lowest common denominator. Don't cater to the low man. But if that dude's on the nozzle at your house, like, he's got to have a hose load that we know he can pull ever 100% of the time.
Right.
And I hate, you don't want to lower your standards, but at the same time, we can't have them to the level of your highest performers, because there's always going to be people who are middle of the road that they're not listening to scrap on a Monday night. They're not, they're not out training 100 hours a year. They come to work, they do their job, they do a good job, but they don't do that great job. Well, we got to be able to, if your family's trapped, you still need that line done. I think that's a huge thing we forget about a lot of time with our passions. Right. Well, screw those guys. No, we need those guys too. And as a battalion chief, that's a challenge for me is, man, I know I've got people who want to go out and train all the time. And I know I got people who don't want to train all the time. How do you do that? And that's again, you got to be careful in that conversation to not alienate your chief by like, no, this works better, chief. Like, hey, can I show you something? I think is a better approach to that. So
yeah, absolutely, man. I love it.
Answer short question.
Kyle Romigan said the A team can't make all the fires, man.
Facts.
Yeah, there we go. I'm just catching up, replying to Smooth War Cartel. True that. Coming from Ben. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Coming there. I wanted to pull up this. We did a solid 50 minutes or 45 minutes at least on engine, but this is the best way I think I can show it. The picture right there. The old ball. Yeah. Lou Holtz. And who's that? I would like to see one with, like, flowing hair.
Much younger, less tired.
But I do want to I want to shift gears a little bit and go to, and of course keep your questions coming. If you have more questions, I will throw them at Jonah. But I do want to switch to go and get to some leadership and talk about it, because you worked under Lou Holtz. Amazing. I had no idea. I told me I didn't know that until I read your bio. I was like, that's I'm a huge fan. I read the Wins, Losses, Lessons. I love that book.
Yeah, I think the only person that out on the circuit that knows that is Mark Van Oppen, because I always give him crap about his leadership class. I'm like, man, all you do is my dad coached football. Football's hard. Leadership, quarterback, touchdown. Like, I was super fortunate during my college career. I'm no super duper athlete. You know, we got people in the fire service who played pro baseball, football, everything else. I was literally the guy who dealt with the jock straps. I'll confess to it. But I was an equipment manager. I started doing it in high school, didn't make the varsity team my junior year. And I was looking more long-term, like, hey, what can I do to get a scholarship or to keep me around sports? Cause I know I'm not going to play at a collegiate level in baseball or football, which are my sports. Our athletic director was like, well, you can manage. And he's like, yeah, I know the equipment manager up at Maryland. And I'm like, well, that's where my sister went to school. So long story long, I went around and applied to colleges. And I was actually telling one of my firefighters at my station the other day, I could have gone during these years, I could have gone to Florida, Alabama, Georgia, and Virginia Tech. And all but one of those teams made the national championship during my 4 years of college. So I decided I was going to go to South Carolina. went to South Carolina, was a Gamecock for masters and undergrad. And hold on.
You've got something that's clicking.
Oh, that was me fidgeting. Sorry.
It's just go ahead.
I did that and managed football. And then when Lou Holtz came in, I guess that was Brad Scott got fired and they brought in Lou Holtz. And, you know, at the time in football and really leadership, like it was amazing to be a part of that transition up until the point we went 0-11. And but I'll tell you. Part of, and you know, I know your follow-up in our notes prior to this was, you know, lessons learned. One thing is resilience, man. So we went 0-11, and then my senior year we came in and we went 7-4, which was a huge, you know, the Gamecocks were stuck in mediocrity forever. We'll never be a top-level program for whatever reason. I don't know, but we try. And the expectations are always super high. But I was fortunate because Lou, one of his systems he used at Notre Dame was he took an equipment manager and it was a senior manager. He wanted a senior manager appointed by the actual equipment manager who works at the college. He's, you know, a full-time employee to pick a student manager who he thinks could handle the job of working for Lou. So Josh Atkinson, one of the senior guys, did it. And then you are mentored. So as a junior, I was chosen, hey, you're going to be the guy next year. You follow Josh around all year. And so when Josh would be, you know, have to take an exam or be out of town, I was the guy on the field. But what Lou did is the minute he left his office to the minute he came back to that office, that manager was his guy. He's the only person's name he knew. You knew what he wanted. He had very specific requests. He was very picky. He was very demanding, very aggressive. If you've ever seen any tapes of Lou Holtz, he might be this tall, but he's scary. And then my senior year, I transitioned to that and you were in charge of accountability of the players, team meetings, it was super unique experience. And you got to listen to all the pregame hype talks and all that stuff. And I don't know if Kurt's listening, but the half we came in down there to the swamp and we were going to beat the Gators that time, and it was because of the pregame speech that Friday night that Lou gave. I wanted to run through a wall, and I'm 5'10", 170 pounds at the time. But so I learned a lot during that process of being around Lou Holtz really for 2 years, directly with him, with players, working directly for him. That just a lot of pieces, and I'll let you, I know you want to delve into some questions, so I'll let you kind of drive it.
No, it's awesome, man. What lessons impacted you the most? And you said resiliency, so that's kind of there, but the aspect of your mindset changed the most learning under him, like preconceived notions versus what you left with.
So there's two pieces to that, and I've learned this from some folks in the fire service too, but the base was really built there is knowing what somebody's going to do before they do it.
Ooh,
having the ability, and it's not to play personality games or to manipulate people. It's to help you drive what you're trying to accomplish or to help you drive a positive interaction with that individual. And I think that's a huge thing as an officer, because to me, if I know how my captain's going to react to what I say to them, then I know what I can say to either fix or escalate that. And then I can drive that expectation on how we can go from there. Because Lou, I mean, just, you know, and everybody's like, well, that's, you know, maybe, well, you read that in a book. No, I learned that because Lou Holtz had a very specific, and I should have brought him in here as props. I got some other stuff sitting here, but the biggest thing, he had two pipes, pipe tobacco, some sort of damn nasty mints that he kept in there, two caffeine-free Diet Cokes every day. You had to have the cooler done. So it's just expectations. This is what I expect, Jonah. Every day you had that. And the one day where somebody took the pipe, I had somebody subbing for me one day, and they took one of the pipes out, and I didn't check the cooler. Boy, it was fun. A couple of the players said they felt bad for me. I got cussed out twice, once because the film thing swallowed a VHS tape, and the other time was because one of his pipes was gone. But again, expectations were set clearly. They were held to a high standard, and the players were the same way to watch that piece of him. He had very high expectations. He wanted to win a national championship even when we went 0-11. Every game was a new game, you know, but he treated people – he disrespected some people out on the field. But I think every now and then it's, you know, as some people have said, sometimes you got to say the tough things, right? But he really pushed people to be better through some stern conversations, but then also a mentoring session afterwards. Like, he would yell at you and snap, but then he'd pull you to the side and be like, hey, this is what's going on. I'd never forget, he pulled one of our running backs. He cussed him up and he was yelling at him like this. And then he pulled him to the side. He said, come here, I need to talk to you. And I was over there because I was shagging balls. And he was like, hey, you know what you screwed up? The reason I'm so mad is because I know you knew that was wrong and you still did it. It's unacceptable. Are we going to move forward? And he goes, yes, sir. And that was it. It was the end. Water under the bridge. He started it was that. But again, predicting, and you got to have that by relationships, right? Right. Everybody always says leadership's about relationships and blah, blah, blah. Relationships, but also understanding the reaction of others, because if you're trying to make the changes that have been asked in this conversation already, right, you've got to have the ability to understand what you're up against and play that chess game, but then also have the ability to have a positive, even if it's an unpleasant conversation, to still have that person, the ability to still have that relationship, right, to move forward. So my big takeaway, again, expectations work, resiliency, you know, because we lost 21 games in a row at one point. And that resiliency, but then again, just that relationship-based leadership that you can't lead anybody if you don't know anything about them. I think that's a big piece.
Love it, man. That anticipation piece especially, man, just leading to high performance. Firefighter Rescue Survey, it really reminds me of it because J-Lo just said, Jonah Smith, the man, sorry I'm late to the party. But yes, Firefighter Rescue Survey, people want to get involved. Wherever you want to go with Firefighter Rescue Survey, basically. I'm passionate about it. I'm passionate about spreading the message of it, but go.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think it came out on County Fire Tactics, 7, 8, 9 years ago. I saw it. I had submitted a couple of rescues we had here in Charlotte and the surrounding counties, got some information. And then, 3, 4 years ago, it kind of clicked like, hey, we ought to be capturing this for my fire department, for my organization. We're rescuing people. We went through a couple options, couldn't make it work, couldn't figure it out. So then started looking at getting promoted, was in safety, kind of going to more fires, seeing that we're actually pulling people out. We're not capturing any data. Our fire department is super data driven. And so I reached out to the one and only Brian Crush, because, you know, that was when it was hot and heavy with him doing his thesis. And he said, hey, call J-Lo, who, you know, super squared away guy, Oklahoma City. He's like, hey, this is how we did it here. I think you could do this. Gave me a lot of framework and a lot of help. And we were able to get our own internal survey here in Charlotte. And in fact, tomorrow and the next day, we got some meetings on it to try and change some things up with the new update we just did and stuff like that. But I think that it was that. And then Brian said, hey, I'm going to add you to this group chat. And I was like, okay. And next thing I know, he's like, oh yeah, hey, you're going to be on the website as a name of a contributor. I'm like, okay. And here I am, part of the group, not near as critical as other people in the group, but it's a super good thing for the fire service. I think if I've ever seen, I've never seen anything. I'll say I'll never seen anything with as pure a motives as what the group that started the rescue survey. It is literally, you know, you can say for them, and it is literally about making citizens' lives more savable in an IDLH environment, and allowing us to improve our operations, right? To train to it. And I know that J-Lo can speak to that, what they've done in Oklahoma City with changing their search training based on the data.
Love it.
You know, it's incredible. And the cool thing is Brian, you know, with his reach, his popularity, his ability to, you know,
bring
a scholastic research into a bunch of dumb firefighters on Facebook that we all are, right? Looking for the likes and the clicks, man, that really boosted it to a next level. And, you know, Justin, you know, all Jason, all the guys in the group that have really pushed it out, were able to push it out. And then next thing you know, it's like, hey, we got 3,000 rescues. You know, it took however many years to get to 2,000. It was like, hell, you know, then we start texting back and forth. It's like, hell, we already got 3,000. Like, it's only been like a couple of years. Like, I just put these slides in my slideshow.
Right.
But I think it's important for people to realize, like, it's not hard to submit. And for larger departments, I know when J-Lo and I were out in Missouri, they're trying to do something with the state at the state level to try and do a formalized reporting. The rehash of NIFRs keeps coming up in the conversation, but I'm kind of with what Brian has always said about the rescue surveys, man, the way it is now is working. There's no contamination of it, right? It's still the same people who were driving it from the beginning with a couple added people being a part of that. The conversation of, hey, should we ask this question or that is super humbling to me. I think it's one of the coolest things I've ever been able to be a part of, and to have it in my organization, to have the ability to say, hey, since we started, we've saved 43 people out of fires. And I think, you know, we've always looked at fire loss and we've never looked at the saves. We're starting
tracking our wins, not just our losses, measuring the metrics that matter.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, not many people watching this are, you know, involved in accreditation. Another secret of mine. I'm our accreditation manager in Charlotte. Of all the people, they picked me, but I've actually been involved in that process. And that's been a big piece that I always talk about is we directly reference the firefighter rescue survey we are doing in Charlotte into that model, because one of the critical criterion in that model, in the CIPSE CFAI accreditation model, talks about tracking lives saved, property saved. Well, I don't know of another way besides a firefighter rescue survey. So if you're battling, you know, to get it, you're in a department where you feel like you could have some data points and you're accredited, like, call me, we'll walk you through it. There's a piece there. And I think people don't realize how easy it is to really do your own. I will say Charlotte, it appears, as far as larger organizations, we had some of the bigger challenges in getting it implemented just because of IT stuff. But man, it's a great thing. If you don't know what it is, find it, Google it. It's out there everywhere. It's awesome to see the data being used in hands-on training.
Right.
I know in my engine training, that is something that I hit hard, and we're going through in our insert. What happens when you find a victim and you're on the nozzle? Because 24% of the victims are found by the fire attack team, and we've never nationally showed how to do what.
Like, addressed it, right. Just yeah.
Just drop the nozzle and pull them out. Well, that's great. But if my 12-year-old's laying in this hallway and you drop the nozzle and pull him out, that's probably 3 breaths he just lost. So
AJ Christ coming at you said, is that something my chief officers need to report, or is that someone on the company level can do? So it depends on if you're talking about just filling out a survey or if you're talking about implementing it on your department. But go ahead and you can speak to that probably. Yeah,
so in our department, and I don't know the size of his department, but like our department's 1,000 people. We knew our captains. J-Lo does a little differently. The captains, I believe, enter theirs because it's a little more culturally thing. The IT holdup we had, it's me and another and a captain. Are the ones who enter it. We basically get an email from the chief who commanded the fire, and we fill it out, and then we go on the national, fill it out, and then send the company a copy of what we filled out, and hey, don't fill out the national. Because that's something I don't know that is really out there.
Yeah, you don't want to double up. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, Corley, is one thing that we're working hard in the group is to make sure that we're validating responses, and we're working towards that to make sure that seven Charlotte firefighters don't enter the same rescue, and then we got 3,007 rescues, and it's really 3,001.
Right.
That's something that data validation folks we brought on are really working on, which is pretty cool that there's even a data validation group. Everybody's like, oh, it's just a bunch of, you know, it's McSexy and McCrush out there, you know, doing everything. And no, there's people who are doing nerdy data stuff to make sure that we're being pure with the message and
awesome.
And all that. But that would be within your department. And I know a couple departments that have said, hey, we're going to commit to this, have come up with a formalized policy that the officer who, you know, does the rescue shall submit to the firefighter rescue survey, blah, blah, blah. And that can be the policy your department does. Our department, we are fortunate to adopt our own internal policy. So it's a little more work on me and the captain, but we're doing it 20, 25 times a year. I can handle that to gather that data. But again, to answer your question, I would recommend if your department's looking at it, is formalizing that policy into this XYZ person reports it. And then that's the extent of your policy. You know, just your command staff's going to have to buy in that you guys commit, and then, you know, send us an email with the firefighter rescue survey so we know and put the, if you look, the number is growing every day of departments doing it, which is, you got, and you know, big departments, small departments, like it's everybody. It's really cool. Cause the funny thing is the challenges to it. And J-Lo and I were talking about this at Missouri. Oh, well, it's voluntary. You can't verify it. Okay. Right. I can verify mine because me and one other person have entered ours, and our percentages are almost exactly what the first 3,000 are. And J-Lo's are within a percentage point or two on almost every category. So in true validated data, the numbers are the exact same. It's just a smaller, if you want to get statistics in number, right? We're at like a 50 something. I forget what J-Lo's at total, but our percentages are within percentage or two of the national stuff. So,
right.
It's pretty true stuff.
McSexy and McCrush t-shirts coming soon.
I prefer the brush photo that Sean Duncan put in his FDIC class where it's Gary Busey or whatever, but the hair everywhere. But
going to first line fire service training, Dennis Riley wants to know, are you tracking the victims past the fire scene, or is it into the fire scene, or is there any post-incident?
So this is, and I'm going to say that's one of the challenges because that is kind of where you get into that gray area that the firefighter rescue survey stayed out of a lot because some departments track that as HIPAA information if you track survivability in the hospital, right. Because then it becomes a patient record. You know, there's a variety of things. With what we're doing is were they conscious and breathing on their own? And fortunately through our medical director, in Mecklenburg County, we are able to track that and something we're doing. We don't carry the cyano kits. We carry, oh my God, I should have, it's basically a generic of it. That's a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
Somebody on here is a paramedic will know. I can't remember what it is, but I get a report monthly from we don't run Medic here. Jamie Love over at Medic gives me a report whenever they use the hydrogen disulfide is what it is.
Okay.
And so we can also track that because then I can go, hey, on that patient number, on that chart number, what was the outcome of that patient?
Gotcha.
And I'll tell you this, something cool. I know the cyano kit's kind of a hot topic with a lot of people following the rescue survey. It pushed a change with our medical, you know, our third party ambulance to do an in-service to remind their people when you have smoke inhalation to give this hydrogen disulfide. Because the whole reason they were issued it here in Mecklenburg County is because of a firefighter line of duty death. Richard Sheltra died. He was a Pineville firefighter, which is a contiguous town to Charlotte. It's across the street from Charlotte. There were Charlotte units there at the line of duty. One of our companies actually pulled him out because it was a mutual aid fire. But Richard died, and they found he died of not just carbon monoxide poisoning, but also of hydrogen cyanide poisoning. So that pushed our medical director and Chief Guerin at Pineville really pushed forward hard and Medic. It was one of those things. It's like a Pearson nozzle. You forget it's on the truck until you need it on the garbage truck fire. And you're like, we don't have one of those. You're like, yeah, it's on the top of the truck. So Medic, that was something we were able to push from the fire department to say, hey, can you remind your people? And so part of their in-service was that. And we've seen, what's funny is we've seen them use it on almost every smoke inhalation victim since then, including we had a car fire where somebody was trapped. That was the last one they used.
Gotcha. So, I love
it. To answer Dennis's question, we're able to internally rescue survey. That's going to be really dependent on the organization. But the question, I believe that's one of the questions we tweaked to kind of fit what would fit everybody nationwide a little better. So
beautiful, beautiful. People have been saying it. I'm looking forward to Jonah's book suggestions. So I do love to ask, man. We barely scratched the surface, like always, because the great questions from the audience. But I do love to ask a book or books that you think firefighters should be reading. Doesn't have to be a firefighting book, but just in general.
Yeah, I'm not going to stick to the firefighting books because, I mean, that's some of those are cliche. One of my favorite ones for leadership in life is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Right.
That book and that book series, there's another one that I've sought out, but I haven't purchased yet. But that book describes life. And again, in terms of leadership and the importance of having goals and continuing to set goals and all these things that, you know, Corley talks about, you know, oh man, hey, we're going to lead. We're going to keep going. We're going to do this, but you got to have goals, and those goals can't be, okay, I'm going to have the best company. It's got to be, I'm going to have the best company in the city. Well, guess what? That's never going to happen. You're going to have to continuously keep going. And that was that one, The Gift of Fear.
Yeah. I don't know this one. That's why I was very excited.
I think that's Gavin DeBecker, I think, wrote that one.
Okay.
Yeah, and it goes into mindset, man. It's about, and it, he just talks about how
does it get into fear response, kind of like
Grossman? Yeah, it goes to how the human mind works, why training is important, why it goes to that, you know, Dave Grossman stuff. And really, Chris Brennan with the Fire Service Warrior Group got me started on that kind of piece, and you know, I love those kind of books. The On Combat is another one, you know. Just because of how it sets the mindset. And that's where my passion for training comes in, is because I know that if you've trained 100 times on stretching lines, when you stretch it at a house, it's going to be like training. Even if the fire's blowing out and people are screaming out the window, you're going to go, okay, there's somebody screaming out the window. That means we got to get water on the fire. Hey, you remember how you did that one person ladder throw driver that you said you're never going to do? Could you do that real quick while we go up and address the fire?
Right. Like,
and I think that's a huge piece of that there. You know, I think that's a big, big book that I really enjoy a lot because of the just the mindset piece. And I think that and the last one I'm going to say is Deep Survival, for the same reason. Deep Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. And it's the exact same reason, except it goes more into mindset about how the newest rock climbers are the safest. And it should remind us that the newest firefighters are the ones coming out with some of the newest training. And we can't just, you're the new guy.
Right.
Because he talks about these guys setting up anchors on, you know, sketchy anchors. And, you know, Jonah's been doing it a while. So, we can hang off that. I've done it 100 times. And I'm gone. And the new guy would go, no, sir, that's not correct. And he talks about fighter pilots. He does mention firefighters. But he focused mostly on rock climbing and there's a lot about fighter pilots. And then he talks about police officers and it goes into the, I think he's the one that mentions the, LAPD, you know, with picking up the brass,
yeah, police.
And the stories you hear, he talks about why that works in the mind and the neural pathways and all that kind of nerd stuff that everybody's like, I don't want to read about neural pathways, but it's actually pretty cool because it also, I sit here now as a 20-year guy, you know, you've been on the fire department a while and things come out, right? Things come out in the fire service. I remember when ticks came out and everybody's like, oh my God, we're going to get lost everywhere. Nobody's going to be able to, oh my God, it's awful. The worst thing ever. Left-hand search is where it's at. And that's only been 20 years ago, but think about it. You get new stuff on an air pack or, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk radios, but Bluetooth on radios and everybody's like, oh my God, we can't do that. And it's like, I catch myself going, wait, am I the guy that I sat here and listened to? I got, and because it is a natural hardening of your brain over years, you get set in your ways and you become your dad. I was explaining that to my kids the other day. Like, one day you're gonna be acting just like me, kids. But I think it's important to understand all that, because then you do have time to reflect as a leader, as a captain, as a firefighter, to go, wait, am I the guy who was saying all this dumb stuff when I got on? or is this legitimately the dumbest thing I've ever seen? Right. I mean, because sometimes it is legitimately the dumbest thing you've ever seen.
Right. Sometimes it's not the exaggeration. It's not the hardened brain.
Right. Literally, sometimes you're like, this is stupid.
Right.
But again, I think reading those books has got me to think, wait a second. And I've said this in the fire station, like, we're getting new air packs in the next couple of years. Oh my God, it's going to have all this electronics. All right, well, cool. I get it, but what does that do for us? Or, is this dumb? Is it not? I don't know, but.
No, I love it. It's great. Great point to bring up about that. We were talking about, who is it? Oh, well, yes. Great point about that. I love the books, man. Thank you. Thank you. Now it's time for one of my favorite parts, the 5 questions for firefighters, versions 3.2, because we've made yet another first time change to the questions. So we'll get through them here. They are completely, there is no right or wrong answer. It's completely arbitrary. The answers are your opinion, and the points are arbitrary, I should say. And they're passed out by me with the aid of the audience, who will help me pass out max points or not. And so my question for you is, you are the only one who knows about the change. Are you ready for the next 5 questions for firefighters version 3.2?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. We're going to do this. Question 1, what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
I think anybody who knows me will laugh about this, but talking to people, gaining relationships, being able to approach people of different backgrounds on scenes, different backgrounds around the firehouse, and in an attempt to relate to multiple levels of people who are really into the job, who are really not into the job, who are struggling, who are not struggling. And I think that's a skill I learned when I was young, hanging around the firehouse. I used to hang around with a guy, Thomas Hamm. I've got a picture in one of my presentations of him. He'd probably have a stroke if he knew I'd mentioned his name on the internet and had a picture of him. But he grew up in a very deprived area of Richmond. I grew up in a better area of Richmond. I went to a nicer school, and he kind of taught me that the world's about different people than what I've been around. I went to school with 54 people, and he went to school in one of the worst high schools in Richmond, very dangerous, but he was a firefighter. And he said, man, one of the things you're going to have to learn is you're going to have to learn how to relate to people. And I will tell you, for de-escalation on scenes, working in areas where people didn't even speak the language we do, being able to calm everybody down and sort through stuff or the firehouse, just a calm demeanor to bring people together. And I'm not going to say I hadn't pissed people off, and I'm not going to say that I'm great at it all the time and that I hadn't made mistakes. But I think that's one of the things I feel like I'm able to do pretty well, relate to people that are different than me on different levels. And I mean, right now where I'm at, I'm at the airport. I have never been at an airport station in my life permanently assigned, and now I'm the battalion chief over it. So I got people who I've got to lean on. I had to learn how to run calls at the airport. I had to reach out to a firefighter 1 or firefighter 2 to teach me. It's a humbling experience.
I love it.
But some chiefs would look at them and be like, you got to teach me. And me, I was like, hey, man, I'm going to look like, and this is literally what I told him, I look like a dumbass on every day anyway. I need you to make me look less dumb if something really bad happens today. And I think that's been a great experience for me too, is that piece. But again, that's what I think's carried me.
Now, Josh Everett and Alan Glucosi, both of them said max points. Being able to speak to anyone is key. Max points, lost art, relating to people. Yes, 100 with a heart. So, no, easy crush on the first question. So,
well, I'm going to ramble for just a quick second. I know I don't want to keep going too much.
I
think the nobody likes us and we don't care stuff is not really good for a variety of reasons. I understand that. Somebody's going to see this tomorrow at work and be like, oh my God, he said he can talk to people. He's an asshole. I get it. But I was that guy. I was the guy who said, well, I don't care if the command staff doesn't like me. And you know how much I got accomplished? Nothing. Right. You can't be that guy. You can't, again, you can't be that guy. That it's a great slogan and some great Facebook likes, but it doesn't work in real life in a real fire department or in real life. I mean, overall. So.
Love it. Hey, yeah. Feel free to rant anytime. I love them. Question two. It's job town. It's time. You're in route and responding. You're slapping that cassette, just like in the scene from Backdraft, right? What song are you playing en route?
Eastbound and Down is what I said. It was torn between a couple other songs, but I was like, man, there ain't no better song. Problem is we probably wreck my, or pull past the house.
Right? Too far? Let me see what they say. I
even
like
though
it. Like,
even though it says trucking on it, I know somebody's going to say that I like a trucking song. But
right. No, hey, it applies. It's applicable. Max points to that. Max points. I will give Eastbound and Down. Max points. James Michalisco. Hell yes, Max points. There you go. Long live Jerry Reed. Max points. Loaded up and trucking. There we go. Yep. There they come. Yep. Max, there it is. Number three, what is your favorite fire service tradition?
So I have been, since you sent me this last week, I was like, man, that is a tough one to nail down. But I think, and everybody's going to say the kitchen table. I like coffee, wherever it is. And the funny thing is, as a firefighter, and this is, and I guess this shows my age, as a firefighter, I didn't drink coffee. I started drinking coffee when I started studying for the captain's test and was staying up late at night or gotcha. Trying to like avoid falling asleep from working at a station where I was running 20 calls and like five of them after midnight. Me and a guy that were stationed together, we'd go to his house and study when we weren't working part-time or whatever. And some days I was like, and no, we'd throw the coffee on. I think that's even if, you know, and I'm sure somebody on here is like, well, I don't drink coffee either. I get it. But wherever the coffee happens is generally where you'll find me. Afternoon coffee, one of my stations in my battalion's like, hey, Chief, 3 o'clock coffee time. I'm like, what happens at 2 o'clock? They're like, you know what happens at 2 o'clock. Don't come by at 2 o'clock. Come by at three. Coffee's on at three. But I think that's it's a time, whether it's the dinner table, at my station, it's where I'm at now is a unique fire station because there's 15 people there on a daily basis. But it's kind of, it draws everybody together,
right?
For that. And it's everything from talking about how awful your kids acted last night to how, you know, terrible our job is, you know, the right. Fire department's falling apart because whatever. Right.
Yes.
And then I watched a guy sling pallets the other day for 40 cents a pallet. And I was like, we all looked at each other. I said, I don't think we have it so bad.
Yeah. No doubt about it, man. I need that frame of reference.
Just drinking coffee, hanging out. Wherever that is, whether it be in the tailboard, whether it be, I really like the family time aspect. And some people are going to say the dinner table, but I'm a man, wherever the coffee's on, whether it be the kitchen stand. I mean, a lot of the other day we hung out in the kitchen for 30 minutes while I went in to get a cup of coffee. And next thing I know, 30 minutes later, I still hadn't got a cup of coffee and we're just talking about everything. So
beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, I don't know if people that love the fire service cannot get max points with their answer when it comes from their heart. I really don't on that question. Yeah. Like I 100% max
points. Because everybody's going to say dinner and everything else. And I mean, I just think that's because it's more informal. I like, you know, dinners, hey, you're 12 and 6. We eat 100% of the time, you know.
I'm with you.
But I think the coffee is like you just wander around with a cup of coffee and everybody knows you're there to hang out.
Right on. Alan said this about question two, about the music, the song question. I just lost it. It scrolled on me. No. The answer is almost as good as the night that question was formed. That actually came from a vigilante meetup. We all met down in Pensacola Beach. The vigilantes all did. And we were discussing our favorite musical experiences, whether it was live concerts. It was a fun discussion. And it turned into – I think Rob Fisher actually asked the question. You're pushing the tape in. What song's playing on the way to the job? And that became question two. So anyway, he was referencing that. That's the kind of stuff the vigilantes do is they change the course of the scrap and the five questions. All right. This is the new one, or this is the change for this. This is what makes it 3.2 because it's the Mount Rushmore, the fire service question. But the thing is I wanted to figure out a way. I'm getting a lot of honorable mentions. I'm getting a lot of long, drawn-out answers on this. Putting it on a clock. That's what's changing here. The first time a five question has been put on a clock. And so 7 o'clock over on Jonah here in a second. Yeah. And I'm going to ask him the question. He has 1 minute to tell us the four people he would put on the Mount Rushmore. 1 minute to put it on there. So I'll let Sam do his thing here. Then I'm going to ask the question. Magic, like magic, it shows up. All right, Jonah, who are the four people you would put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service? 1 minute.
So I definitely would say I'm going to start with Bobby Halton because Bobby had a large influence on the fire service, and I know some people didn't like Bobby, and that's fine. But I was going through a rough time in my life, and I'll never forget he called and talked to me for 2 hours. Little known fact, but he gave me a chance at FDIC to teach, but he reached out to me, and I have no idea how he knew I was going through a rough time, but he was a good man, despite what some people might think of him. Andy Fredericks, of course, 9/11 engine guy. You can't not have Andy Fredericks on there.
Love it.
My opinion, that's, you know, if anybody didn't think he was going to be on my Mount Rushmore, I don't know how. I think John Norman, I've had the opportunity to actually sit down with him and meet him. Great guy. Ooh. And then the last one's going to be Dave Fornell. The book you can't buy, but the best engine book out there.
And there it is. Under time. Perfectly under time, which automatically makes it max points, dude. Hey, very well done. Very well. I love the new format. Absolutely love it.
And the funny thing about Dave Fornell being on there, Dave Fornell, and see, I'm going over a minute, but Dave Fornell, he motivated me to go to eat sushi. I don't eat sushi. And one of the guys from Fire Engineering said, well, Dave Fornell and Brian Ward, I'm like, Dave Fornell's going to be there? Like, I'll eat whatever. Right. If I get to eat dinner with him. So,
love it. Final question. It's the question that's never changed.
You There's know. Heavy...
Sometimes I'm surprised, okay? It's the engine guy. But heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Nozzle. Man, because you just said we got searchable space. I'm going to create some more searchable space.
Love it. I would be surprised if it was not the answer.
And I mean, the thing is, I can say I've done both on a fire. We had an entrapment here at the Volunteers. Confirmed entrapment. Neighbors said, hey, she's in there. She went back in. And we VES'd, and that was fun. But when we got in there in the nozzle and started pushing, that was way more fun. We did both because we had half the house was unenvolved, so we VES'd real fast. And then I went where I wanted to go and got the nozzle, and next thing you knew, I was having a ball. So,
dude, you absolutely crushed it. Yep. 5 for 5. And the new one under time with like 1 second to spare. And that officially, with those answers, makes it 210 scraps in the books. Chief Jonah Smith, thank you for an amazing evening. If someone wants to get a hold of you, reach out to you, get information, book a class, whatever it is, how do you so?
The old book of face. Again, Jonah Smith, you can add me there. Hornet Fire Training is my little LLC. Hit me up there. And, you know, if you don't do either one of those, hornetfiretraining@gmail.com. I made it simple. Just shoot me an email. And, you know, anybody who knows me, it might be a week, it might be an hour. It just depends on when you catch me. But I'll get back to you. If you want that hose study, I know that I'll probably regret saying that, but I'll send it to you. So you can kind of see what we did. I think that's been probably the most requested thing after a class or something is, hey, we want to see how you did it. Cause,
right.
Chris Martin, you know, with Elkhart, they did one in clay. And he and I were kind of doing it at the same time. So we kind of leaned on each other with some organization, but we knew what we were up against. And we knew that if we didn't bring it, it was not going to work out for us. And it worked. And it wasn't the Jonah Smith show. You'll see the names on there. You'll recognize a couple of the names. You know, some of them also teach around. And we had a spectacular group, but I'd be happy to share it because it really helped us. And it was super in-depth, way more in-depth than probably most of y'all. Y'all want to know flows and if it kinks. We had if it stacked well. So
love it, brother. There you go. Everybody go to firehousevigilance.com, become a vigilante. We're getting ready to have the vigilante after party where we go in there and critique and supposedly roast the guest, which there's been very light roasting so far, but we're working on it. That's happening in a few short minutes. So if you're going to be there, look for the link in the Vigilantes Facebook group next week. Jeff Rothmeyer. I'm excited about this because I destroyed that book. I mean, literally destroyed that book with highlighter ink and stickers. His Mastering the Craft book that just came out in June. I love the book. We're going to talk about it a lot next week. Then Brian Richards out of Wisconsin. And then my brother Frank Lieb coming back once more to talk about his new book. So the next few scraps, like, man, just lighten up. That's everything. I'll be in Arkansas this weekend. Have Vigilante meet up there. Everybody, I don't think I got anything else. My brother, Jonah Smith, thank you for spending a wonderful evening making giving value back to the fire service, brother. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you all for listening to our rants. And if you're downloading it, thank you. I can tell my kids I'm famous because I'm on a podcast.
Heck yeah.
I keep telling them I'm a social media influencer and they don't believe me.
You can show them what you're on YouTube. It'll be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Not as good as Mr. Beast, though.
Yeah, well, audience, man, as always, you make the scrap magical. Thank you for spending your evening with us. Thank you for the great questions. Kyle, as always, pulling them out, keeping everybody informed, slapping up links. Thank you for tuning in live. I love you all. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tones stay silent. Unless it is burning, everybody, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.